Welcome to Module 3 of Software Engineering. In this module, we'll talk about software processes, particularly software lifecycle models. Software lifecycle models are ways of organizing the main activities of software engineering. And this week, we'll talk about so-called traditional software processes, which include the waterfall model and some early iterative and incremental models. Next week, we will then discuss agile development, DevOps, and continuous software engineering, which are more modern approaches. So while the models we discussed this week are traditional, well, that's old, they are still very important as they are used in various places still, and they also form the basis for agile development. But before we go there, let's talk briefly about software processes in general. Generally, a software process describes how an organization, team, or individual carries out software engineering. Such a process can be defined, documented, and followed, or it can just be agreed upon and followed without having any documentation. We usually say that all organizations have software processes, regardless of whether they have defined it or not. But most typically, an organization specifies a software process, and often they use some existing model or framework. So some processes that you might have heard of include Scrum, Extreme Programming, the Rational Unified Process, or RUP, and the Waterfall Model. We will discuss several of these in this and in next week's lecture. It's of course also possible for an organization to define a process completely without using any existing framework. Though this is more rare, it can of course help ensure that the process is a good fit with the organization. More common, though, is that organizations take a well-known process framework and tailor it to their needs, that is, make adjustments to it so it fits their particular situation. Well, in any case, regardless of whether a process is based on an existing framework or not, most process descriptions define three basic entities and their concept. The first one is the activities, that is, what's done in the process. Here we typically model software engineering activities like defining requirements, designing the software at both a high and a detailed level, implementing, testing, and deploying it. The second important category that we define when we think about software processes are the artifacts. That's the work product that represents the results of the activities. So these would then include the requirement specifications, the architectural descriptions, the detailed designs, the software code, obviously, and also the tests, both manual and automated tests, deployment scripts, and user manuals. So everything that is produced in a process can be modeled as an artifact. And finally, the third category then that we're interested in is who is responsible, who is involved in the process. And this is called agents, or often also we use the term roles. So we identify who is involved or interested in various activities. So these could include Scrum Masters, testers, customers, product owners, managers, developers, and so on. And then in addition to identifying these three basic classes of entities, we obviously are interested in how they are related to each other. So process models also identify the relationships within and between these entity classes. For example, temporal relationships between activities, so this activity comes before that activity and so on, and hierarchical relationships, this activity consists of these and these sub-activities within a category. Relationships can also obviously include relationships between the main categories. For example, the product owner responsible for the backlog, or the testing activities carried out by the tester. So with these basic concepts, we are able to model any and all software processes. So this is good to keep in mind. You will find different terms used for the same things, but these are typically what we need to model when we want to model and understand the software process. But let's next turn our attention to lifecycle models. Lifecycle models that we focus on in this module are high-level models of the software process. These are models that provide then a bird's-eye view or high-level view to the main activities of software engineering. different models differ typically in the way the temporal relationships between the activities are specified, as we will see when we take a look at the examples. The actual activities included in the life cycle models obviously vary a bit. Typically, again, as I said, they consist of the main software engineering activities, like requirements, design, implementation, deployment, testing, maintenance, retirement, and so on. Some models add additional activities and some leaves some activities out. But typical now is the focus on the high level perspective. And now in this module, we will focus on what I refer to here as traditional life cycle models. Those are the ones that have been with us more or less since the beginning of software engineering. So you will also find that the readings in this week's module, they are a few years old, but they still are extremely relevant because these models and the principles they describe are still used, and they also provide the basis upon which more modern models are built. So this week we will talk about two principal models. We will talk about the waterfall model and the iterative and incremental model. And then we'll talk about some examples of the instantiation of iterative and incremental development. We will talk about Microsoft's sync and stabilize model and the rational unified process, or RUP. And next week then we'll talk about agile development and talk about models such as Scrum, Kanban, extreme programming and DevOps. But let's start where software engineering started, with the waterfall model. The waterfall model, which you see in the picture here, is a sequential model in which each main activity starts when the previous is finished. So this is the same idea that we see in more traditional engineering undertakings. We typically refer to the activities in this model as phases. So we talk about the requirements phase, the analysis phase, the design phase, implementation phase, testing phase, and deployment phase, really stressing that these take place after each other, typically with no overlap at all. Because the idea here is that each stage produces a set of documents. So in the requirement stage, we produce a requirements document. And then at the end of this stage, that document that is produced, or documents that are produced in that stage, they are formally approved in contracting projects, also by the customer, and then they are frozen before we move on to the next stage. Freezing here means that we cannot change these documents without formally approving those changes by the same people who originally approved them. And this is now referred to as change management. And this is typically carried out by a board known as the Change Control Board, or CCB. And as you understand, then the idea here is that we do every stage perfectly, and we then document it and we freeze the documents. And when that's done, then we move on. So we first understand their requirements, then we design the software based upon those requirements. Then when the design is done and approved, we move to coding. Then we start implementing the software. When all the code has been written, we integrate that into the full system. Then we can test the full system. And finally, we deploy the whole system in one go once everything is done. So there is no release of any kind until the last stage, when we go into deployment. And in this model, moving between the phases, that is doing iterations, is basically considered harmful, and it's strongly discouraged. So the idea is that we do such a good job in the early phases that we never need to go back to them. The waterfall model is probably, well, with the potential exception of agile development, the most influential model in the history of software engineering. And yet, it was defined on a misreading of Winston Royce's classic paper. And I have provided that classic paper for you, which describes the waterfall model and actually already recognizes the problems you run into when using that model. So that's reading one for you, classic paper in software engineering, and this is a good and easy read. I know that some of you thought that reading three in last week's module was difficult. I was a bit sad to hear that, because that's another one of the most classical papers we have in software engineering, which actually is a very good paper. So as a tip already now, you can expect some exam question from that paper. But next, let's take a quick look at the pros and cons of the waterfall model. Well, the main pro, obviously, is that it's a model that's easy to understand. It's very, very structured and it's logical. And when you do a project according to the waterfall model, you will have a very well-documented trace of everything that has been done. And basically, as planning is done only once in the beginning, so in case there is no need for iterations or significant replanning, you will do less planning in the waterfall model as a total in the whole project compared to iterative and incremental models that we'll talk about next. Well, and finally, thanks to its clear structure and well-defined documents and deliverables, this is a favorite model of lawyers, and many contracts are based upon it. So you basically, when you approve a document, that's also noted in the contract. So the contract, the clauses and payments and dates are tied to the end of the phases. However, obviously there are some downsides to a model like this. So first of all, it relies on the assumption that you can get the requirements exactly right in the beginning of the project. And in many cases, this is really not true in the real world, as we will discuss in more detail when we talk about requirements engineering. Well, the reasons for this are many, but let's mention a few. For example, changing technologies during a long project, the requirements might change. And another issue is that it's notoriously difficult to understand what users really need without being able to show them anything. And as you don't deliver anything until the final end of the project, there is no feedback loop for customers. There's nothing to show to users until the end. So it's really difficult to incorporate user feedback. And the fact that documents are under strict change control in this model. So if we at a late stage get a change which requires updating, let's say the requirements, then the design and so on, and all documents from all phases, it becomes very expensive relative to getting that change early. You can see here a figure with old data from real world waterfall type projects, where you can see that a change that costs one unit in the beginning, if you get it at the requirement stage, can cost 200 to 368 times as much if we get it at the late stage in the end of the project after the software has been delivered. So you can think of this, for example, in work hours. So something that would take 1 hour to fix if you are in the requirements phase, the same thing can take as much as 400 hours to fix after system delivery. And then obviously this is due to the fact that when you have to change the requirements document, get it approved, change the design document, get those approved, change the implementation, get that approved, test and deliver and so on. So there's a lot of extra work that needs to be done due to the approval and document heaviness of this process. However, despite these rather significant drawbacks, this model is still in use in many organizations around the world, and it's thus not only of historic interest, but it's almost as relevant today as when it was first defined. So it's really important for you to understand and know this model. But next, let's turn our attention to iterative and incremental development, a way of working that tries to alleviate some of the problems created by the waterfall model. This idea is also very old, as you can read in Reading 2, and also you see thoughts about that also even in Royce's paper. So the idea here is basically really simple. Instead of building and delivering everything at once, in one single iteration, one waterfall, we split it up. We split the whole software development project up into several so-called increments. And each increment adds part of the functionality to the whole system. And when you're done with all the increments, then you have the full system, as you can see here in the picture to the right, when the system is this builds up of these building blocks, these boxes. And obviously this way we can get earlier feedback on the system that we can use to influence later increments. So in this model, each iteration is basically a self-contained mini waterfall with its own requirements, design, implementation, and testing activities. And really at the end of each increment, we have a tested running version of the software that we can deliver or show to the customer. And obviously then after the last iteration, then we have the whole system delivered. Very often in this model, we preclude the first iteration by a high-level planning stage, where we look at things like the overall product vision and try to identify at some high level a full list of all the requirements that we'd like to implement in the system. We typically, in this model, then prioritize these requirements in various categories. Very common categories include must-have, things that we really need to have to make the product viable. This is related to the concept of minimum viable product, as been popularized by agile development. Then we have should-haves, things that are really important but not absolutely necessary. Could-haves, that are one level below, and then wants, that it basically doesn't matter at all if we have or not. And we use this kind of prioritization to schedule the requirements into the increments. So often we use the logic of including the most important ones in the early iterations. That all means that the most important requirements will receive the most testing and will be sure to have them implemented by the end of the last iteration. And to the right here, you can see an example of such a model that many of you probably have heard or even used already, Scrum. So Scrum, an agile model, is basically an iterative and incremental model. It uses some own words. Instead of talking about iterations or increments, they are called sprints, and they are supposed to produce running tested features. We'll talk more about Scrum next week, so stay tuned for that. Well, as it turns out, the incremental model actually is, in a way, in many ways, an improvement on the waterfall model. And there are several benefits we can achieve by adopting this model. First of all, as I said, each increment produces customer value. So we can deliver customer value earlier at the end of each increment, making system functionality available to customers earlier, and then we can get feedback earlier and change things in the later iterations, and this makes the final product better matching the true customer needs. So the early increments, in a way, we can think of them as helping us elicit the real requirements for later increments and to get feedback on system performance. All of these together mean that we have a lower risk of overall project failure. It's also, if we think about the waterfall model, then we try to manage everything as a one huge undertaking. Here we can think of each iteration as a small project that makes it easier to control and manage and plan and so on. And we also get a very meaningful progress indicator. If we want to know how far we are with our software development, it's the amount of tested software. So we can ask the question, how many of the features that we need to implement are already there? This is a very good metric for software progress. We'll talk more about this when we talk about management and project management for software engineering. As I said, the highest feature, priority features tend to receive the most testing. And a very important effect also is that developers really like this model because they get feedback and can deliver something that works earlier, and this is something that increases their job satisfaction. But naturally, well, it's not all sunshine. There are some downsides to this model as well, unfortunately. These include that, first of all, it can be actually harder to plan and control than waterfall development, since we allow for changes, and we might only have a quite high level, not very specific view to the requirements at the early stage, making it a little bit more difficult to understand how much resources we need and how long time and how many increments we might need. Since each increment involves planning and testing, we do more planning and more testing in the iterative and incremental model than we do in a waterfall model, where we do basically these activities only once. It may require some more experienced staff, since we typically in this model have less documentation that can be used to guide developers than we have in the waterfall model. Since we expect in this model the system to change between the iterations, the system architecture must be amenable and adaptive to change, which really stresses the importance of system architecture. And finally, we can mention that most contracts are still often drawn up according to the waterfall model, and changes might require renegotiations. There are modern contract models that take this into account, so it's not that clear cut, but it's good to remember that many contractual basic models stem from the waterfall model. But in practice, most modern software development models are based on the iterative and incremental model. So we can interpret that as meaning that the benefits in most cases outweigh the downsides here. Okay, next let's look at two examples of some traditional iterative and incremental models. We'll talk about the rational unified process and Microsoft's sync and stabilize process. Well, the rational unified process was developed by Rational Corporation and later acquired by IBM. It is basically a combination of the waterfall model's ideas and the iterative and incremental model ideas. So it specifies four phases that are similar to the waterfall model. We talk about the inception phase, the elaboration phase, the construction phase, and the transition phase. And the inception phase is very close to what the waterfall model's requirements phase. The elaboration phase is close to design phases. The construction phase is close to, that's the implementation and testing. And the transition phase is when we take it into use, that is deployment. So these overall big phases correspond to the waterfall model. But however, if you take a look at the picture here on the slide, you can see that each phase can be split up into a number of iterations. How many is up to you when you adopt the model. You can define the exact number of iterations for the various phases yourself in your project. But in the picture here, we have, for example, iterations I1 and I2 for the inception phase, E1 and E2 for the elaboration phase, and so on. And as you also can see here, the actual software development activities here are modeled as what is called workflows here. These are depicted in the horizontal rows in the picture. So the workflows here are business modeling, requirements analysis and design, implementation, test and deployment. And as you can see here, which is now very different from the waterfall model, is that many iterations can involve several or even all of these activities. But you see the thickness here of the workflow picture says how much you would expect that workflow to be visible or involved in a certain iterations. So for example, you would have a heavy stress on business and requirements modeling in the inception iterations, whereas the testing and deployment is mostly done during the construction iterations. However, as you can see here in the picture, you can do, for example, early prototyping and even deployment as early as in the elaboration iterations, if that's needed. For example, to understand a requirement or a technical solution proposal better. The rational unified process is also strongly linked to the UML modeling language, which we'll talk about later during the course. And it produces both, first of all, a large variety of models, as well as a huge number of documents. So this is another way in this model is similar to the waterfall models. It's very document driven. It produces potentially a huge amount of documentation, but it does so in an iterative and incremental way. And as another and the final example of the iterative and incremental model, let's take a quick look at Microsoft's sync and stabilize model. This was developed by the Office division at Microsoft. And this model starts, as you can see in the picture here, with the development of a product vision. This vision describes what a product is supposed to do at a very high level. It's typically just a few pages long. And based upon this product vision, then you draw up a high-level functional specification, also in the maybe tens of pages, but not longer than that. And so if you think about what is a product here, so in the Microsoft context, Microsoft Excel, Microsoft Word would be the products here that we talk about. And then the actual development project is split into three or four iterations, each of which then adds part of the product functionality as done in iterative and incremental development. During each of these builds, you then have a development cycle in which a number of small teams develop the software in parallel. At Microsoft, when they used this model, they had basically a coder paired with a tester. So they worked together, and each day the software was then integrated and built. That was called, that's the synchronizing the model. And a set of tests were run. And at the end of the build, some weeks were reserved for stabilization. That is only testing and fixing bugs, no development of any new code. So what we can see here is we look at some really modern approaches to software engineering. These daily builds used can be seen as a precursor to today's continuous integration when things are built within seconds after being checked in into configuration management. But we'll talk about more about that later in the course. And obviously there are still today many systems that are so big that you cannot really do continuous integration in the optimal sense, but for example, only weekly build and test the whole system. Well, but as you can see here in the picture, the last iteration is different from the earlier ones in the sense that it has a milestone called feature complete. This basically is the date when you specify that after today, no new features will be added. You can continue coding, but that's basically just fixing and improving the features that already have been added. This date is important because then you can also start finalizing what will go into user manuals and so on and marketing materials. So that helps you prepare that while development still goes on. Following this feature complete, a beta release will be done, and then a user interface freeze will take place. And finally, after this, still working on the code, there will be something called code complete. And this means that no new code can be added at all. So only final testing, debugging, and stabilization, doing various kinds of system tests and fixing whatever you find, takes place. And finally, the iteration then ends with the final release, which will be the product shipped that will be shipped to customer. And as I said, this model was developed in the office division, so it also meant that they were able to use something called time boxing, meaning they could fix the dates for release dates early on, because what they could flex with, the same way you do in agile development that we'll talk about later, you can flex and move the content. So you have a fixed shipment date and you will ship what is ready by that date during that given date, and what's not ready will be moved to the next project. So this is something that you're able to do, for example, in office software division where you have quite a lot of flexibility with respect to what you really need to ship. So this process, fixing the dates, letting the content vary, is known as time boxing, and we'll get more into that next week. Okay, and in addition, of course, to the waterfall model and the iterative and incremental models that we just talked about, there are other high-level lifecycle models, including the ones you see here, the spiral model, which is a risk-centric lifecycle model. There's component-based development. There's development based on formal methods. There is model-based software engineering. And there's agile methods. And now, most recently, we also see what we can call here as AI-assisted software engineering. We don't have time to go into detail of all of this during this basic introductory course, but we will touch upon most of these later during the course. And with that, thanks for staying with me so long. It's time to end this lecture. I want to wish you the best of luck with the readings and the exercises. Have fun, work hard, and see you next week for our lecture on modern software development processes. Bye for now.